5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And tonight on the Patient Patriot Podcast, we're going to talk about disillusion. Stay tuned. We are live, coming to you from an undisclosed location somewhere in Northeast Ohio. I'm Josh McClay, a.k.a. O'Malley. That's Brian Weller, a.k.a. Sasquatch of Two Tigers Tactical. And this is the Patient Patriot Podcast. I want to thank everybody for joining, whether you are watching live or in post. The number to contact the show is 330-809-1924. Or you can email us now at patientpatriot@yahoo.com.
And where else can they catch us?
Currently, we are on 11 platforms. Spotify, iTunes, Anchor FM, Google Hangouts, Pocket Cast, Breaker. There's...
Okay, and so is it... When people search for it, are they searching for The Patient Patriot, or where are they typing in?
Patient Patriot. Okay. Two words.
Patient Patriot.
Yep. And if you look us up on Anchor FM, you'll see the red, white, and blue Patriot guy's face.
There you go.
That's probably the easiest way to find us.
Sounds good.
So we're going to start off light today. Brian is going to sing us a fantastic, and I mean a fantastic song.
So I told Josh, because sometimes we, as we wait for people to join the broadcast with us, and sometimes we start off with an icebreaker and just get a little bit silly. I told him I had come up with a song on my way over because, as many of you already know, I'm a lyricist and an aspiring rap artist. I don't have a rap name yet, so if y'all could help me out with that and put some ideas in the comments, that'd be fantastic.
You're a musician as well.
Well, yeah, a musician, but I'm an aspiring lyricist and rap artist. But anyways, I came with this up with this on the way over, kind of in the vein of Weird Al hijacking someone else's tune and putting your own lyrics to it. I let Josh know that I'm Brian the Sasquatch Man, a patriot of the land. Sometimes I get quirky from too much beef jerky. I'm Brian the Sasquatch Man. Toot, toot. And if you're not old enough to remember where that song came from, then you need to broaden your cartoon horizon and watch some old school Popeye. But anyways, I might turn that into a loop on one of my rap songs, just to let you know.
A little, so kind of like Vanilla Ice stole "Under Pressure" by David Bowie and Queen. So you're stealing a little bit of
Popeye.
So you make your millions, you pay your copyright infringement.
And yeah, a little bit.
You go on about your business.
There you go.
So anyway, this evening on the podcast, we want to talk about sort of the disillusion on both sides of the aisle. We have people on one side that believe socialism is the newest, latest, greatest thing, and then we have people on the other side who, regardless of what the president does, they say it's the gospel and amen.
Yeah,
and it's almost the point, if you step back from it as a libertarian,
which we both identify as,
right?
We're slightly different places on that scale of libertarianism, because that can be a big catch-all too.
Sure,
it's like saying a Republican, and that means a lot of different things to different people.
Sure,
but yeah, we're kind of somewhere in the middle of those two parties, and so we get to point at both of them and laugh a little bit.
And sometimes not just laugh at them, but laugh at some of the things that people are doing.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's also that sort of darkness that comes with certain ones where they sort of cheer things that probably isn't something to be cheered about.
Yeah, detrimental maybe even to our future.
Absolutely.
As a species or our future as a country. And because it scores political points, they're willing to celebrate over it.
Right.
As a teaser on my own page, as I often do, I went live on the drive over here to the Studio B here. And I mentioned the fact that we're going to be looking at this idea of delusion and self-deception through the lens of different political hot topics right now going on in our country, one being the fight over border security and the wall, Another one being the expansion of abortion rights in New York that has been fiercely and hotly debated over the last week and a half on social media and over the internet. That there are different cultural kind of touchstones that help highlight this, whether it's a government shutdown or, as Josh had mentioned before the broadcast, this idea of municipal IDs in the city of Chicago. There are all these different moments and stories that kind of help us to see where this self-deception really gets strong and unfortunately dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
So which one do you want to start on, brother?
Let's start with the wall. That to me, that one's
all in all, you're just
another brick.
Another brick.
the thing that kind of makes me question, well, it's probably 10, 15 years ago, one of the reasons I moved away completely from the quote-unquote Republican Party,
mm-hmm.
is the idea that someone can do something so incredibly stupid,
mm-hmm.
and look like a true knothead,
mm-hmm.
and people will find a way to say, oh, no, he's right,
mm-hmm.
even when he's dead wrong.
And when did that? What instance are you thinking of that many years ago, or was there one, or just you're talking in generalization?
I would say the last straw was the Patriot Act.
Sure. So we're talking about George Bush, and this also highlights a theme, and it's funny that you would start here because it ties into everything that we want to talk about tonight. This idea that just because your party is in power, your political party, your tribe, does not mean that you have to support everything they do, and you can be intellectually honest and say, no, that is just a ridiculous position to take, or no, that is a terrible policy to try and enact. And the Patriot Act is one of them. There were plenty of times, whether you liked George Bush or not, whether you hated his guts, there were times where he did a few things right, times where he did a handful of things wrong. One was spending like a drunken sailor and increasing the national debt. And yet you would still have conservatives and the Republican Party defending him, even though he was spending like a liberal Republican, like a Rockefeller Republican. And people were defending him to the death that, no, he's right on this issue, and this is amazing. And there are just times where you can take a step back and go, yeah, I voted for this guy, and as a whole, I like what he's trying to do, but this particular area is really boneheaded.
Right. Well, and I would say the first time I actually questioned something, like hardcore, I wasn't even out of high school. Maybe I was. Is when Bush 1 said, no new taxes.
Mm-hmm.
He passed new taxes and lost.
Sure.
One issue, mm-hmm. and he lost the whole ball of wax.
Yes.
And so when I see certain parts of that party,
yeah,
you know, it to me, that's the exact same thing as a woman's march being canceled because it's too white.
Mm-hmm.
That's the party eating itself.
Yeah, it's kind of, and I've talked about this at times with coworkers and stuff, that the length, the amount of intellectual gymnastics you have to do to stay truly partisan to your party is so so offensive to me, so intellectually offensive, that I can't do it. I can't be so partisan to my party that I leave my mind at the door to walk in, because then it becomes like a religion. It's like a sick, twisted religion that you're going to believe everything your damn party does because you're so entrenched against your political opponents that you feel you have to defend your own party at every turn, even when they do foolish stuff. And so, you know, your first glimpse of that was under Bush. I wish I could say I woke up, or even Bush Senior, because I wasn't aware at all of politics back then. I was just having a good time living life. Kind of shifting away from the Republican Party, because originally I was a Democrat. You know, I voted for Clinton the first time I was able to vote.
Mm-hmm.
I was 92. I would have been 19 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, my first awakening that, you know, look, You can agree with somebody or you can agree with a broad philosophy and still say one or two of these big things are wrong. And for me, some of those aha moments kind of happened under Bill Clinton, but then it took a lot longer for me to see the hypocrisy and the goofiness within the Republican Party, because I went from Democrat to hardcore conservative Republican and now have moderated back to a libertarian where I just want to be left alone and do my thing.
Right. And once upon a time, that was a huge part of being conservative, was just wanting to be left alone.
Yeah.
But now, I mean...
Yeah, it's changed.
Yes.
So let's pick one of these topics and talk about how we can get delusional on both sides of the issue.
Okay. Let's talk...
You started off talking about the border wall, right?
Yeah, the wall. Let's talk about the wall. Now, and I've said this before, do walls work? Of course they do. Of course they do.
Yeah. Now, can I jump in real quick?
Sure.
And say walls by themselves...
Right.
Are not completely effective.
Right.
And so we get this parsing of language on both sides, which is just moronic. Mm-hmm. You know, the left will say walls don't work, which is, I'm sorry, regardless of what your political party is, that's imbecilic.
Right.
Walls do work.
Right.
There's a reason we have doors on our homes that lock. There's a reason there's a wall around the Vatican. Mm-hmm. There's a reason there are multiple walls around Israel, who is surrounded on all sides by enemies.
Right.
There are multiple examples of walls historically working, of walls being encouraged theologically in the Old Testament. So, you know, when I see these extremely liberal priests on Facebook and people passing this around like it's the greatest video since sliced bread, arguing that, you know, walls are anti-Christian or immoral, you're just being silly. Now, walls by themselves are ineffective, I would agree. Somebody's going to throw a ladder, dig a tunnel, pole vault that bad boy,
right?
You know, mm-hmm. trampoline over it, form the human chain, and like they do in some of these firefighter competitions where they stack them up like pyramids and throw one over and then they all sure. pull the rest. So walls by themselves are not completely effective, but walls as part of a larger border security are absolutely effective.
Mm-hmm. And the part that I was reading the other day, the shutdown that was tied to the wall, at this point, the shutdown was more expensive than the wall itself.
Hmm. Let that sink in.
Yeah,
all of you, you know, here's the thing. We got a name for, as conservative kind of libertarians, I hear a lot of the bashing of the left. And so we've got Trump derangement syndrome is what we typically call people on the left that are, you know, that buy into the whole orange man bad kind of
right.
NPC type meme, the non-playable character. They're just so entrenched in a groupthink that they can't understand that he's not Hitler. But there are just as many people deranged and delusional on the left or on the right mm-hmm. concerning Trump. Now, I think anybody that is an independent observer that doesn't have skin in a political, you know, the two-party system could easily point to the ending of the government shutdown as a blink in the game of chicken by President Trump.
Right.
It is not hard to see how this, in the short term, was a political victory for the left.
Mm-hmm.
It was. Now, yet I have delusional, as the left would call them, Trump, what? Trump-tards?
Trump-tards.
Okay. you know, delusional people that support Trump act like this isn't a big deal and that Trump's still the man and this is part of his Machiavellian scheme to ultimately win the larger argument. And maybe it is. You know, maybe he's got something up his sleeve, or maybe he was concerned about airport security as, you know, and air travel as that started to factor into a prolonged shutdown and out of a desire to not be caught, whether it was by true terrorists or a deep state false flag. Maybe he said, you know what, it's time to end it and try to figure out a different way to achieve this goal. But the bottom line is he went into the shutdown over a wall. He ended the shutdown without a wall. It's a political loss.
Right.
But it goes to show how delusional people can become because just like the left hates Trump no matter what he does, some people on the right support him no matter what he does. And even though this was a political loss,
right,
they still can't see it.
Right. Well, and I think it gets to a point they don't want to see it because, and I've said this a couple different times, a couple different ways, you know, the tax cuts, they're not permanent.
Correct.
We still have Obamacare.
Correct.
We don't have a wall.
Correct.
The list could go on.
And Republicans have been running on ending Obamacare for how many years now, for God's sake?
Right. And
a decade?
And
has it been around that long now, 6 years?
It's been...
something like that.
Yeah. Well, and they had a majority at the beginning of his term.
Correct.
So, when I see this, and when I see so far he's had two appointees to the Supreme Court, and in my opinion, again, he dropped the ball both times.
Mm-hmm.
Supreme Court justices are supposed to be contextualist. Mm-hmm. They are not supposed to be right or left. And that... so when I look at his presidency, from what he said he was going to do, there was a lot of it I was for.
Mm-hmm.
The stuff that I liked that he said he was going to do, it didn't happen.
Correct.
The swamp didn't drain. It's filling at an alarming rate.
Yeah.
If the other side was in office right now, the first thing that would come up almost daily would be national debt.
Yeah, we are in an absurd... and I just saw on Drudge Report earlier this evening where I think it's the previous owner of Starbucks, his last name might be Schultz,
mm-hmm.
Is planning a possible third-party run with the national debt being his central campaign platform. And the Democrats are panicking because they're concerned as a moderate Democrat, he is going to radically pull votes away, much like Ross Perot or any third-party candidate that gets traction does for the conservative side. I tend to pull votes away. So there's a lot of people in panic mode, but I think he's dead right. I don't know anything about his personal politics or any of the rest of his platform. But when it comes to the national debt, man, if this was a Democrat president, conservatives would be losing their mind.
Mm-hmm.
And also on Drudge Report today, what is today's date?
28th.
Okay, January 28th, 2019. I just saw where the Treasury is giving a thumbs up to pass another $1 trillion and self-funding by spinning off more Treasury debt and printing more paper money, fiat currency that eventually America's financial chickens will come home to roost. and we're going to see some inflation and probably hyperinflation before it's done.
Yeah.
You cannot print this much damn currency without it having
any type of backing.
It's insane that, there was a point where, I remember Sean Hannity, this was years ago now, probably 6 or 7 years ago, talking about when the national debt hit 17 or 18 trillion, that our GDP at the time would not be enough to service that debt. That means pay the interest on it. So can you imagine your personal house income not being enough to pay the interest on your credit cards, let alone the rest of your bills, just the interest on your credit cards? And yet nationally, that's the point we've gotten to where our GDP barely covers, and depending on which numbers you look at, doesn't even cover the interest on our national debt. We are in critical, critical times. We are $20 trillion plus. Sometimes that you look, you try to find the number, and it's magically kind of capped at right around $20 trillion. And yet we know it's being added to on a daily, weekly, monthly basis. And much like the cost of the hospital to the city to bring it here locally, which we don't want to talk about in this episode, but might be brought up at another time. This is just money that's being thrown away as the government prints more currency to cover it. It's insanity. But if this was a Democrat in office, the right would be freaking out about the national debt. But because it is a quote-unquote Republican who's all about spending and borrowing and big government programs, almost like FDR, maybe not quite to that scale, we're all like, yeah,
right.
Trump, orange man, good. We're just as crazy. Not me.
Right.
But the right is just as crazy
absolutely.
With orange man good as the left is crazy with orange man bad.
Mm-hmm. To turn a blind eye to some of the, just sheer blatant, like once upon a time, to be conservative and to do anything that was remote, stepping over the boundaries as far as privacy goes, they would mm-hmm. cry foul in a heartbeat.
Oh, yeah.
That whole concept has changed. Now they're like, well, you think that's good, we can do more.
Yeah, that's concerning if you're a freedom-loving conservative or even a freedom-loving libertarian or centrist, is the idea that the Republican Party has become really what the Democratic Party was maybe, what, 25 years ago?
Right.
Not quite all the way back to Kennedy, because he was more conservative than even that.
Right.
But the Democrats or the Republicans have become kind of the Democrat light, where we're... You know, the new attorney general that's being proposed is all about red flag gun confiscation. Now, I swear to God, if that was a Democrat in office putting up this attorney general, people would be marching in the streets with torches and pitchforks over the Second Amendment. But because it's Trump that has put this guy up here as the nominee, you can hear crickets from the right about the Second Amendment and what this guy's belief system. He is just as dangerous, if that's truly what he believes, and it's not just some kind of front to fool the left. If he really believes what he's saying right now in his confirmation hearings and as he's being pushed out there, then he's going to be just as dangerous for the Second Amendment as the previous attorney general was under Obama.
Absolutely. And I think just because that, like, when Trump first got into office, and there was this thing called net neutrality.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And he brought in the guy that was I believe he was the attorney for Verizon, brought him into the FCC, I believe it was. And there's like a three-person panel. They get rid of net neutrality because they said they wanted it to be a free market.
Yes.
AT&T bought Time Warner for $54 billion. You tell me where that market is free.
It's not.
And at the end of the day, if you had, let's say you had Verizon, AT&T, Maslin Cable, and let's say four or five others, when you would look up at the street poles, you would see that many different wires. You don't see that.
No.
So when people say, well, it's for to have a free market, no, there is no such beast when it comes to a utility. That'd be like First Energy charging you a certain rate because you used certain appliances.
Mm-hmm.
People would cry foul in a heartbeat.
Mm-hmm.
And what they were trying to do, and like I said, I don't have any problem talking good about somebody I completely disagree with, and I did not like Obama, but when he passed net neutrality, that was a step in the right direction, because what he was saying is, if you're an internet service provider, you can't slow him down or censor him. If they're paying for it, they get everything.
Yes.
The first thing Trump did, brings this cat in, net neutrality is gone. And now what are they doing? They're deplatforming people.
Correct, because their argument is we are a private business, not a public utility. So, and which that's a whole another sticky widget, as you would call it, is the idea of how a free and intellectually and financially free internet stays that way. You know, as a libertarian, man, I am all against government intervention. And yet we have systems in place on both sides that are trying to monopolize the internet, and that makes it a tricky, you know, problem. But it goes to show, which is what we're focusing on tonight, the idea that when somebody on the right does it, if you are right of center, you champion and cheer it regardless of what it really means in your real world life.
Right.
And if somebody on the left does it and you're on the left side of the political aisle, you cheer it and celebrate it even when it's morally suspect or financially irresponsible or culturally inappropriate. And it's just crazy. So let's shift to another. We kind of talked about the idea of border security. Trump has lost this round of the game of chicken concerning government shutdown. Now, 3 weeks from now, we'll see what happens then, and we'll be back on to talk about it. But even if you're on the left and you can't stand Trump, you know, to try and argue that a wall is ineffective is moronic. A wall combined with digital surveillance, all kinds of cool electronical toys, combined with agents on the border or maybe military personnel on the border, however that looks, whatever that looks like, it is a multi-layered process, but a secure wall, fence, border barrier is a part of that puzzle. And when you on the left argue that it doesn't need to be a part of it, you make yourself look foolish.
Right. I think my thoughts on the wall is this. You have states on that border. That wall is going to go in their state. You leave it up to the state to build the wall. If they complete the wall, they get a subsidy from the federal government. Mm-hmm. And the reason I say that is, and we talked before, Arizona wanted to put people on their southern border.
Mm-hmm.
And Barack Obama and the Department of Justice sued the state of Arizona, mm-hmm. and said, you can't do that.
You can't secure your own border.
Right. And now here we are, and we're saying, well, Fedzilla has to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I would, and again, and that's one, does the state want it? If the state wants it and builds it, then they could get a partial subsidy from the federal government. I think that is a far better way to go, because then you take that power away from the House and Senate.
Yeah, I would agree with that, brother. I think that's a state rights position on that, is to let the state build it, and then the state pursues the federal government for reimbursement on what they had to use to secure that border.
Mm-hmm.
No, I agree. That's fantastic.
And then, again, now you don't have the House and the Senate stepping on a state's right to secure themselves.
And you don't have this political back and forth, this game between parties over how it's going to be funded, what it's going to look like. You leave it to the state to secure its own border, mm-hmm. and then they seek reimbursement. I like that idea. And then it takes this big party national debate out of it, and it's a state's rights where you have, here's the thing, at the federal level, we have very little power, you and I as a citizen.
Right.
I go and cast my vote, we think it makes a difference, I hope it does, but in reality, there's very little accountability, even to your federal senators and representatives, even when they live in your state and you can try to address them and influence them. The reality is we have very little power at the federal level. We have more power at the state level as a citizen. Not a ton, but more. At the local level, you have even more power. So all of your politics and your political power is from you out. And the further out that goes, the less power you have. So at the state level, if the citizens of Texas, if the citizens of California want to build a wall and secure it in the best way, because they're the ones dealing with it on a daily basis, you go out and talk to the ranchers in some of those border states that are having to deal with the dead bodies that are turning up and the Muslim prayer rugs on their farm ranches and property. You talk to them, and I'm sure they have some pretty good ideas on what needs to happen to secure Absolutely. Their backyard, just like I know how to best secure my house.
Right.
And leave that to them to figure out. Now, in states that don't have a desire to secure their southern border because of political fanaticism, then the federal government can penalize those states or withdraw aid, like for California, that says, as a state, no, we're not going to secure this border. Then either the feds can pull money back as a penalty, mm-hmm. or the states that border California can then raise their own security and walls against the state of California.
Right.
Now, what the risk of that leads to a balkanization of the states, much like the Civil War, or much like
right.
you know, much of Europe or Greek, the city states in Greece, back during the rise and fall of the Greek Empire. But the bottom line is, this is a state issue, and I agree with what you're saying there.
Yeah.
Let's move on to a different topic that highlights this delusion that we have between the right and the left. You want to talk about abortion?
Yeah, let's talk about abortion.
Now, I will say this. If you tuned in wanting me to preach against abortion, you're going to be sadly disappointed. Not because of my personal, religious, or political beliefs, but just because that isn't the purpose of this show tonight. Josh and I have never sat down and talked about this issue. Mm-hmm. I have no idea where he stands on it, and I don't know that we've ever even discussed it on this show. The only reason I bring it up is because it shows the lunacy, the intellectual dishonesty that tends to surface during partisan politics on a hot-button political societal issue. And so earlier this week, if you've been living under a rock, under Governor Cuomo, New York expanded its abortion rights. They took a clause within their abortion rights that used to read that a woman could have a late-term abortion in order to save her life if it was medically deemed necessary. They expanded past the life of the mother to include language that says the health of the mother. And if you know anything about abortion law and this hot-button political issue, you know that in 1973, the Supreme Court not only heard the Roe v. Wade case, they also heard a case, a congruent case, a sister case in 1973 on abortion rights, Doe versus, and I, to be honest, I can't remember without looking it up, who the state actor, it was the state of Georgia, against a individual Jane Doe client. And basically what was decided by the Supreme Court is that Georgia's anti-abortion laws were deemed illegal at the federal level. And in their court opinion, the Supreme Court at that time basically said that the health of the mother included the concept of emotional or mental health. So that when a state expands abortion rights to include the health of the mother, that then basically you can say, if you are that mother with carrying that baby, you can say, look, this pregnancy has me going crazy. I can't emotionally handle it. And if you find a liberal enough doctor that says, okay, I will allow you to move forward on this procedure, then you now have late-term abortion all the way up to the due date of your baby. That's what's been accomplished in this New York law. You can have abortion all the way up to delivery date, the very last day of your third trimester, for just about any reason you could come up with under the guise of the health of the mother.
Health, right. Versus the life.
Versus the life. And so that's what the left is celebrating this week. They lit up the World Trade Center Tower, the One World Tower, whatever the monument tower is that's been erected there. They lit it up pink and celebrated this mass expansion of abortion rights. And conservative news outlets accurately portrayed what this bill accomplishes. Now, regardless of what you believe on this issue, because I'm not here to champion one side or the other, I'm here to highlight how delusional we get in the political game. I got in multiple debates about this, that what the bill is accomplishing is what I just said. And if you don't believe me, look it up. ABC cited it perfectly. I should have provided you with the images that I threw out on the web. But ABC ran an article that said, yes, this indeed gives abortion up to the day of delivery for the health of the mother, which includes mental and emotional health. Not only ABC, but CBS ran basically the exact same story, saying third trimester up to day of delivery. And yet I have people that are pro-choice, pro-abortion, arguing with me nonstop that that's not what the bill does. And it just goes to show that when you are so politically entrenched in an idea or on a platform that you can't see the reality of the language in front of you. All you had to do was read the news articles in the bill, connect it to a Supreme Court case, and understand that this is a massive expansion. Now, whether you agree with it or not, I don't care. That's your personal belief, that's fine. You vote for the person you think represents that. But what you can't argue and still remain intellectually honest is that this bill does indeed accomplish that. And yet people are trying to minimize the impact of it because they don't want the political fight. Right. They want to say, I'm pro-choice, but they don't want to have to defend this bill. No, just be intellectually honest and say, this bill massively expands abortion rights. I don't necessarily agree with how far they've gone, but I am still pro-choice. You can take that stand, and I can respect you for articulating that. But when you try to argue with me that the bill doesn't accomplish what it indeed does, then I have to dismiss you as being so delusional that you can't have an intelligent conversation.
Right. You know, my whole, the start of how I view abortion, it comes down to the federal government saying yes or no to a medical procedure.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And for years before Obamacare, mm-hmm. everybody said, it's just. And I said, no, it's a medical procedure. They're saying you can either have it or you can't have it. Fast forward, now we have BerryCare. Mm-hmm. Okay? Now we're moving more towards single payer. We're moving more towards, okay, you have to provide this. You have to give this.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's more than just that procedure, right? Mm-hmm. You have to supply birth control. You have to do this. You have to do. Now the federal government is completely overreaching in mm-hmm. healthcare. We're sure. forcing you to have something. We're forcing you to give something.
Mm-hmm.
And myself personally, that's how I see abortion. If you think for a second that they're ever going to outlaw it, you're living in fantasy land. Do I personally believe it's wrong? Of course. Do I think it's just as wrong that the federal government steps in and says, you can have this medical procedure or you can't? I mean, it's slowly but surely spreading.
Yeah, and I agree with you there. And if there's anything that I can like about New York's law is that at least it's a state law.
It's not federal.
The state can figure out what they want, and the people that live there can have that debate. And I think a lot of these issues lose their political steam on a national level when we allow the states to figure it out. And look, hey, man, I'm as a libertarian, you and I agree on a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
Medical marijuana, we've never really talked about that on this show. I could care less if you smoke weed. I really don't care.
Right.
It's not my drug of choice. I like tequila. Anybody that knows me knows that. You leave my tequila alone and you want to go smoke for your glaucoma, that's your business. I don't care.
Right.
And when it comes to sexual identity and preference, I really don't care.
Right.
You know, even though as a conservative, that's supposed to be one of my primary issues. And as a Christian in the church, you'll hear a lot of Christians kind of, I've had Christian friends and fellow church members kind of dress me down because I'm very libertarian about that issue. I don't care who you want to be in the bed with.
Right.
That's not my business. That's your business.
Right.
And but yet, when you look back to California deciding this issue on Proposition 8, how many years ago now? 12 years? Like that. About same-sex marriage, the state stood up. Their population there, their citizenry, stood up and said, we're not quite ready to give a thumbs up to this issue. And yet the Supreme Court said, yeah, we don't care, of the state, said, we don't care about what you think.
Right.
We're going to say this is going to happen. And yet still, it was a state issue. That was a battle between the citizenry and the court of that state. And a lot of these issues lose a lot of their federal steam if we just left it to the state to figure out their own problems.
Absolutely. And that was one of the podcasts I was listening to. You know, if the federal government stepped in and said, mm-hmm. you know, we're no longer going to do abortion, right?
Mm-hmm.
States instantly are going to legalize it.
Well, and that's exactly why New York moved forward on this issue, is out of fear concerning Trump's last two appointees, because they're quote-unquote conservative Republican appointees. I'd rather see them be constitutionalists like you, not right or left.
Right.
But because of the perceived upcoming threat to Roe v. Wade, the state has taken it upon themselves to say, we're going to kind of entrench this political idea in state law so that regardless of what happens at the federal level, we'll still have authority over this issue. To be honest, I can respect that. I don't like the decision.
Right.
I don't like what it means to life in the womb, but I can respect that they're making it a state right issue. And they're taking a stand and saying, hey, look, regardless of what happens at the federal level, this is what we're doing. Much like the Second Amendment.
Absolutely.
There are states that are saying, look, regardless of what federal laws are passed, we're going to be pro-Second Amendment, and we are not going to allow these laws to encroach or infringe upon our citizens at the state level. I can respect that. Matter of fact, I appreciate it.
Right.
The protection of those rights. But my point isn't to divulge that or kind of degrade down into whether abortion is right or wrong, because that's not the point of this particular podcast. My point is to show how dishonest we get intellectually when we're arguing over this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're on the left and you're trying to say that this bill doesn't accomplish this, you're intellectually dishonest.
Right.
It's okay to say, yes, this bill accomplishes this. I'm still pro-choice, and I don't know if I agree with it yet. That's fine.
Right.
But don't try to tell me that it's not what it is.
Right.
And we have a lot of that on both sides. You know, people arguing over politics, and they'll use whatever source data they can find to prove their entrenched position without actually taking a look and saying, what does this really accomplish?
Right.
Another area of that is the city ID in Chicago. You want to switch to that?
And again, it would weigh heavy on the state's right.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as I read that was my instant thought, okay, if the city's saying, yes, we're going to move forward with this, then you have to say, okay, so where does that form of ID basically start and stop?
Mm-hmm.
And if you remember back when Social Security cards first come out, and this would have been way back, and I seen one of these, an original one, and mm-hmm. it said on the back, not to be used for identification purposes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Here we are, 2019. you can't leave a hospital being born without one.
Correct.
So for Chicago to do this, if they do implement it, who's to say that the state doesn't do that? Or a county? So now, I have one for Chicago, but I'm in this county, and the state says I have to have this one. Which one of those is going to... Because depending on where you have it, depends on whether or not it's valid. And so if you look at the idea for voting, okay, being able to say who you are, I think that holds some weight. To say, okay, I have this ID, you can look at it, you can tell it's me, but oh no, Brian, that's the wrong one, you know, because we're not doing something for the city of Chicago, this is for the state of Illinois.
Yeah. And it's going to be interesting.
And what it's going to do is you're going to see people almost going, aha, you can't do that because you don't have this one.
Or the state yields and says, because you have this one, you can, and that's where the real rub is going to be politically, is I could care what kind of, you know, because they're saying the benefit of this municipal card is going to be that, A, it helps identify you if you're part of the disenfranchised population, and what that means is you're homeless or you're an illegal immigrant.
Right.
And so it's going to give you access to what they're, how they're pushing it or billing it right now, is that it's going to give you access, almost work as a library card or for mass transit. They're trying to show, look, these are the benefits that come for citizens as well, or the franchised, as you would argue. The challenge is going to be is that the state and state law says that, you know, there are certain parameters that have to be met in order for an ID to be acceptable at the state level for voting purposes. And this municipal ID, if they don't change any other language in the law, is going to qualify as identification for voting purposes, which means that if you can get this ID as an illegal, you will then be able to participate in state and federal elections if they don't change some language at this point.
Right.
And that's kind of interesting. I mean, we've never, up to this point, we've never really given that kind of expansive voting rights to non-citizens.
Right.
And yet the city of Chicago is trying to find a workaround.
And the, what I found for the voter ID is it says that leading local officials reject allegations that it will lead to illegal voting by non-U.S. citizens and undocumented immigrants, right? If you go down to the bottom, right... Where is it at? Because it said just the way you said it.
Yeah, basically that it does meet the state's standards.
Right.
For voting purposes.
Right.
Which is interesting.
Right. I can't find it. But it says almost to the word that if you are an undocumented or illegal, that you can get one. So
correct.
Then why would you be able to get it? What's the purpose? If you can't use it for anything, then why would you get it? Obviously, it has some merit as far as having it. Now, you could put on the tinfoil hat and it says, well, it's a way to track you. And
that wouldn't surprise me either.
Right.
So it's a dual purpose. It not only does it franchise or enfranchise, I'm not sure the proper word there, the marginalized for voting purposes and non-citizens, but also as a means for the government to, you know, if you're concerned about top-down authoritarianism, then you ought to be concerned about continuing identification of citizens and non-citizens alike, because if you really think Trump is Hitler, do you want a national ID and RFID where Hitler can actually track your ass? I mean, come on. You know, do you want... the city to be able to use a municipal ID as another means of tracking you, that's got all kinds of scary, concerning issues all around it. So,
right.
But you're seeing a push from left-leaning states, blue states, and certainly Illinois is one of them, and Chicago is at the top of that state and leaning to the left. a push amongst blue states to open up voting at local, city, you know, state and federal elections to non-citizens. And that push is eventually going to be strong enough to start shaping federal elections.
Absolutely.
If it hasn't already.
And that there's a good chance that in certain areas of the United States, it probably has.
Interesting stuff.
So
was there another one that you wanted to talk about?
Those were the ones that I had on the top of my list.
So we covered New York's expansion of abortion rights. We covered the border wall and how it was a political failure for Trump, regardless of what happens in the next couple of weeks. We talked about municipal ID at the city level.
We also discussed indirectly, but it popped its head up a few times, states' rights.
Yeah.
And like you said, states, if it goes to a state level, it's amazing how quickly it can be handled. Because, well, if you look at each state has a governor, mm-hmm. you know, it has its own judicial system, executive, legislative branch, you know, everything is there. That's why the states have that. So my big gripe for at least 15 years or so is, why does the federal government have more power than the state?
I know what else I wanted to bring up, because I mentioned it in my Facebook Live on my own page to point traffic here, and that was the idea of vaccination. So do you want to talk about that real quick and tackle
sure.
that? We got a few minutes left
sure
before we've hit an hour.
Yeah, you know, and I'll jump right into that one and say that it's okay for us to end a life, but it's not okay to say no to a needle.
Interesting.
I can put it that way.
Yeah. And so, you know, and I don't think we've ever sat down and actually hardcore discussed what we each of us believe on this issue. It's no secret that I was vaccinated. You were vaccinated.
Kind of.
Your mom was not an anti-vaxxer that I'm aware of. Or were there some that she opted out of?
I'll say this. I probably don't have all the shots that you have.
Okay, fair enough. And then you have some that I don't have because of your military service.
Yes.
Okay, so we're kind of...
Right.
We're already in the vaccine system. Is it fair, without divulging all your children's medical information, were you more towards vaccination than against when it came to your own kids when they were born?
On paper, my kids have all their shots.
Okay, fair enough. And mine do too. Not just on paper. In reality, they actually had them as well. Where I started to become... I won't say I'm not an anti-vaxxer. I think the technology, vaccine technology, is legitimate.
Mm-hmm.
There are, you know, you go back to the vaccines of 50 or 60 years ago, and many of them had value. I'm not against the science. I'm not against the concept of you choosing to put stuff in your body that you think is going to help you. I'm more of a skeptic.
Mm-hmm.
I have a healthy skepticism when it comes to what I want inside of my body. And so when it comes to my own kids, yeah, in their later years, as I've gained information and weighed risk versus reward, I've taken maybe a stronger stand towards medical freedom and maybe opting my kids out of particular vaccines as they've become required in junior high and senior high. I'm not against the concept. I am for personal freedom.
Mm-hmm.
And yet here's another issue that, depending on which side of the political aisle you're on, and what's funny, this is kind of like medical marijuana. This is an issue that cuts across both political parties, because you have passionate anti-vaxxers on the right and you have fiercely passionate anti-vaxxers on the left. And so this is kind of a uniting issue where anti-vaxxers get maligned by both parties.
Right.
And people on both sides are mostly for it, and a handful are strongly against.
Absolutely. And, you know, and that's one of the reasons where I get sort of, I don't want to say bent out of shape,
mm-hmm.
but some of the same people that will scream
yeah.
that they are pro-choice.
Sure.
You can be pro-choice with a living person,
mm-hmm.
but you can't be pro-choice with an inanimate object, a needle.
Yes.
That, to me,
That's intellectually dishonest. And it goes to what we're talking about throughout this whole damn show.
Absolutely.
The same way with the border. You want to tell me that you want to force vaccinations on citizens because that's the new big push right now. Whether you think they're good, they're bad, or that there is some risk. You know, here's the thing, man. The parrots come out every school year in flu season and go safe and effective, safe and effective, safe and effective. They do this parroting that vaccines are safe and effective. Mm-hmm. The reality is a more honest statement might be mostly safe and partially effective.
Right.
And do your own calculations on whether you think the reward is worth the risk. Well, but here's the thing, Josh, is we're going from, look, the whole point of the Nuremberg trials, post-World War II, part of that, one big thrust was medical freedom. The Nazis were forcing people to go through horrendous medical tests concerning freezing, starvation, heat exposure, exposure to viruses, and what would happen to these people. Extreme medical experimentation where the victims had no choice at all. It was forced upon them by a tyrannical, evil government. And so part of the Nuremberg trials against the Nazis was to say, yes, medical freedom, informed choice, I get to say what goes into my body is important. And that's been established since then that I have that power and authority, that sovereign authority over my body. Yet you have people on the right and the left, including Fox News today, having experts on that are saying, just like climate deniers, if you're skeptical about global warming, and I don't know why you would be skeptical about global warming, considering that Chicago is about to have the coldest stretch of weather in their recorded history, or that maybe global temperatures are connected to solar activity. But put all that aside, you mm-hmm. know, regardless of Al Gore's quote that the planet had a fever and that the coast would be under the water by this time, regardless of all that false science that's been thrown out, there are some people that think that if you are skeptical about global warming, now called climate change, because that covers a lot more, that back in the 70s used to be called global cooling, we were all scared of a new ice age, mm-hmm. That you should be thrown in jail if you're a climate denier. Now the move, and even on conservative news sites like Fox, the move is we should be throwing anti-vaxxers in jail. So if you believe that you should have the authority to make the decision on what gets put in your body or your minor children's body, that somehow you are anti-science, you are posing a greater risk to the herd, and therefore you should be thrown in jail and isolated. But those same people that want to force that on citizens don't want any kind of health checks at the border for these immigrants that are pouring in, who are bringing tuberculosis, who are bringing, you know, hardcore versions of syphilis that we haven't seen here.
Right.
Who are bringing all kinds of, I just saw a story on Drudge about, it wasn't bed bugs, it was some other kind of parasite up in a immigration center in New Mexico that, I could look it up and I'll have to cite it later, maybe in the comments if you want to get clarification, but how they're being overrun. No, it was the shingles. They're being overrun with the shingles mm-hmm. because of unhealthy migrants coming across the border. Look, that doesn't mean every immigrant is a disease infested. I'm not a Nazi.
Right.
They're not all carrying nasty diseases, but we should be looking to screen these people and help them. But the same leftists that don't want that kind of screening and help for border crossers will say that you should be thrown in jail when you want that same kind of medical freedom for yourself.
Hmm.
That's intellectually dishonest.
Right. Hmm. Yeah, the whole...
You're going to get thrown in jail for saying, I don't want that flu shot.
Right.
That's coming.
Right.
Because they started with the medical personnel. You can't work in the hospital unless you have this.
Right.
You can't work for the city unless you have this. You can't be in the military unless you have this. Mm-hmm. And then eventually it gets rolled down to every damn person. You can't participate in society or live freely if you don't have this. Right. And then I no longer have freedom over my body.
Unless it comes to a pregnancy.
Yeah, unless it comes to abortion, then I can make that choice all day long.
Right.
And that's what we're talking about. Regardless of where you fall on these issues, just have the intellectual honesty to see the conflict and the kind of these opposing views that we hold that are diametrically opposed, and try to find some resolution in your life. If you're pro-vaccination, then you ought to be pro-vax for people crossing the border and them getting the medical help that they need through proper screening.
Right.
And, you know, hey, look, maybe you think it's draconian, but there was a time on Ellis Island where we actually quarantined these folks.
Oh, yeah. That was part of the...
And if you don't want that for immigrants, then don't force it on me either.
Right.
You know, don't quarantine me over a flu shot if you're not willing to do it to people right. illegally crossing our border.
Mm-hmm. And that's... The standard has to be somewhat consistent.
Yes. Well, you know, we talk about this. Here's another issue where we're terribly inconsistent, and that word triggered something in me. Not triggered as in I'm a snowflake, but triggered a thought process. And we talk about this in my concealed carry classes, the idea of when you become an adult in this culture.
Mm-hmm.
When are you allowed to drink a beer legally?
21.
21. Unless you're under parental supervision in your home, or even if your parent takes you to the bar, I get that. But in mass, on whole, under your own sovereignty, you can't have alcohol in your system until you're 21.
Mm-hmm.
Can't purchase it.
Right.
Okay, so 21 is adulthood. When can you vote?
When you're 18.
When you're 18. Hmm. So that's when you're adult enough to make decisions about federal policy.
Right.
When can you buy a firearm?
I believe it's 21 now, across the board. Shotguns 20, and rifles, right?
No, 21 for handguns in this state and federally, and still 18 for long guns like shotguns. When can you conceal carry that gun? In Ohio.
21.
21. So right. You're old enough to buy it at 18. Well, a long gun anyways.
Right.
But or an AR pistol.
Right.
No, that would still be 21.
Yeah.
You're legal to carry it at 21, legal to buy at 18. How about consent for sex? Do you know that in the state?
Is it in Ohio, isn't it? It's a certain age or within...
And within a certain gap, yeah. The last time I looked, when I was young enough to actually still, before I was married, young enough to be concerned about those age boundaries, I was probably 18.
Mm-hmm.
I think in state law... the bottom end is 16. Now, somebody tried to tell me it was 15, and I'm not sure about that.
Right.
But it's at least 16 or younger. And the top end can't be more than 18 if the bottom end is 16. So if your partner is 16 or 15, whatever the bottom is, the top end can't be more than 18 until the bottom is over 18, and then the age gap doesn't matter.
Right.
So when it comes to consent over your body and your human sexuality, we have deemed that you're an adult at 16.
Right.
When it comes to voting, it's 18. When it comes to gun purchasing, it's 21.
Mm-hmm.
So we have all of these different markers to say you are an adult.
And here's one that's the real whiz-bang. At 17, with parental consent, you can join Uncle Sam's military. You can have the pistol and the long gun, and they can send you to a foreign country, and brother, you can rock and roll.
But you can't come back to the mean streets of Youngstown or Akron and have a beer or own a gun.
Right.
Yeah, it's a sickness. So I think that's the point, and that's where we can end, is that there's all these incongruencies and opposing beliefs and opinions on these issues. And I'm just wanting to point out that when you come across these within your own philosophical or political belief system, to take the time to analyze what you really believe. If you're pro-choice, be pro-choice, but have the intellectual honesty to admit what a bill accomplishes. If you're anti-gun, be anti-gun, but have the honesty to say Democrats are trying to... I swear to God, there's nothing I hate more, Josh, than when my Democrat relatives over the last 35 years have tried to say, nobody's trying to take your guns, Brian. I'm sorry, what drugs were you smoking today? Democrats have been trying to take our guns since... at least in modern era, and in the way that we understand this argument, since at least the assault weapons ban of Bill Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
You could argue they've been trying to take our guns since the 1930s.
Right.
And
with the...
in the 60s.
What was the one in 34?
That's the one that took machine guns away from us. And I should know this. It was something, the something
it,
act.
Yeah, it had, right. It's gone.
Yeah, I'm the same way.
Right.
And then the 60, was it 68?
Yeah.
With under
LBJ.
Yeah. trying to minimize inexpensive handguns and really impacting minorities that way. So the racist history of gun control. But my point is, look, if you believe in gun control, that's fine. I would disagree with you, and that's fine too. But don't try to gaslight me by saying that nobody's trying to take them.
Mm-hmm.
That is, to put it bluntly, retarded. You are making a moronic argument when you try to argue that nobody wants to take them, when they actually do. And just like it's moronic to say that conservatives on the right aren't trying to repeal and actively limit abortion rights. Of course they are.
Right.
Of course the church, and the combined with the conservative Republican Party,
right,
would love to limit abortion just like they tried to limit alcohol consumption during Prohibition. As a libertarian, I don't want anybody's neck on my throat. I don't want the church stepping on me, telling me that I can't have a drink. I don't want the left. I don't want anybody telling me I can't have my firearms. Anyways, search your soul, man. And be honest about what you believe, and don't try to soft sell it just because you're not willing to deal with the realities of it.
Absolutely. And again, you know, when it comes to something and you look at it and it doesn't seem right, question it. Be the why guy.
Mm.
Question everything. Think for yourself. Don't think what you think because CNN told you to.
Yeah.
Or, you know.
And I think that's a great place to end, Josh. It's just question everything. Be a healthy cynic. You don't have to be jaded.
Right.
But be a skeptic. Be skeptical. And that used to be part of the sciences. That used to be part of political sciences, this healthy skepticism that, okay, this is what I see, but what does it really mean? And being willing to dig deeper to find out the backstory or what the scientific results are producing and what that means for us. Just a healthy skepticism. I think that's what we're encouraging in tonight's show.
And how? I think all we'll right. wrap it up for there. Fair and again, you know, with the shows, everything's an open dialogue. Even when the show comes down, the comments stay open.
Yeah. And we'll always get to them. If you, you know, we get notifications. If you want to ask questions based on our content or argue with us, look, hey, I'm not so thin-skinned that I can't hold my own. You want to disagree with us on any of these topics, throw them in the comment section and then we'll come back to them and talk to you.
You know, in the words of one of my coworkers, as I said, hey man, that hurt my feelings, and he said, no, you don't have any. Yes, open dialogue and good debate and conversation is a must.
Yes.
When that stops, it's really gone bad.
Yeah.
So that's all I got. You got anything else?
That's it.
All righty. Until next time, stay sharp, keep a tight shot, group, and rock on.